Hello there, everybody. Welcome to Purpose Talk.
I am me.
Hello.
I am who I am.
I am who I'm going to be.
Walking in the spirit, moment by moment, fulfilling my own destiny. I am me. I am who I am. I am who I'm gonna be. Walking in the spirit, moment by moment, fulfilling my own destiny.
Hey, everybody, this is Jan Ravel. I hope you can hear me. And today is Monday. Gosh, I don't even remember what day it is. Monday something or other. The 6th. All right. Hi, Cindy.
Hello there.
Thank you. If you haven't figured it out by now, we had some difficulties, some challenges. Just another day at the office. We had, I'm out of town, and so I was trying at a restaurant to get on, and it seems like my computer hooked up, but it didn't have internet connection. So right now, I am sitting in my car in a shopping plaza outside Mateo's Mexican Kitchen talking to you. Isn't that exciting? And this is in Prescott, Arizona, where the sky is blue with some clouds. It's going between warm and cool, and I hope it's beautiful wherever you are. And I understand we have Peter with us. Peter Fairfield is going to talk with us about Keep Happy today. And, Peter, I just want to forewarn you before we get going that because I don't have internet, I don't have all the questions that we were going to ask you, so we're going to have to wing it and play it by ear. And Cindy is facilitating. Remember that our theme song is called I Am Who I Am, and it's by the group True Trinity. And you can find them at TrueTrinity.com. That group is made up of Cindy Freeman, who is our fabulous facilitator and who is responsible for even getting us on the air today. Because, like I said, I'm kind of out of commission, so I'm talking to you on my phone. And Cindy's partners in True Trinity are Jillian Clark and Rachel Martinez, and they just do a fabulous job. So go to TrueTrinity.com where you can download this music, I Am Who I Am, and also another song called Be the Difference, which is a pretty powerful song. Let me see. You can connect with me by emailing me at jan@purposetalkradio.com. You can also, this is kind of fun, you can make a donation to the show if you like. Help us to keep going, whether it's on the phone or the computer, by going to purposetalkradio.com and click on the donate button, and it will take you right over to PayPal where you can donate to the show. You can also become a show sponsor if you would like, and that's pretty awesome because you get mentioned at the beginning and the end of the show. You get on our website, you get on our Facebook page, and in the Facebook Conversations group as well. So it's pretty, you get some good exposure for being one of our sponsors for our show. What else? I did not bring my Oracle cards with me today.
And how can people contact you if they want to, Jan?
Well, they can contact me by emailing me, jan@purposetalkradio.com. You can also email me at jan@janravel.com if you really want to. That'll get to me as well. So, Cindy, do you have any cards, any Oracle cards on you?
I don't.
Okay. Well, you know, we've got this.
We can find them online.
Since I'm sitting in front of Macau's Mexican Kitchen, and there's a macaw, a beautiful red macaw with green feathers as well, then we're going to go with the birds, the macaw, and I'm going to relate it to a parrot because I don't really know the difference between them. So today our card of the day has to do with birds, and particularly a parrot and a macaw. These are birds that are very colorful, that you can see from a long distance away. They're also very intelligent birds because they can learn how, well, we can teach them, let me see, how do I say this? I was going to say we can teach them how to speak, but I don't think that's really true. They can learn to parrot words that we say, but they also are highly developed and intelligent, and they have their own language as well. So it's just something that we don't understand. How many times have you heard a bunch of birds, like a bunch of crows, And you know that if you could just tweak your own ability to hear just a little tiny bit, you would actually understand what they were saying. And it's similar with these birds. They're incredibly intelligent. They not only know the language and the words to use, but they can think and they can use language appropriately in appropriate conversation, which is something that we don't give them credit for often enough. So remember that when you see these birds, and actually any bird today, but in particular when you see a parrot, a macaw, any colorful bird, and even a very colorful flower that kind of looks like a bird, remember to not only are they intelligent, but we need to remember not to feel ourselves superior. That the flowers and the birds and all animals, all creatures, have their own way of intelligence. We are not the only ones who are intelligent. And sometimes maybe we're not as intelligent because we don't use our perception and our intuition the way that the birds and the flowers and the animals do. So today, use your intuition. Allow that inner, beautiful, colorful part of you, that spirit part of you that flies like a bird, that is way more intelligent than our conscious mind, allow that part of you to shine and to speak to you, and then listen. Have the humility to listen to your intuition and to your subconscious. And that's our card for today, is the macaw and the parrot. We can find a card no matter what, right?
So, can I add a little piece to that too for you today, Jan?
Please do, Cindy.
The other piece about those parrots is that they fear anything flying overhead because their predators come from over top of them. It's
okay.
One of those things I think we need to watch for what is totally around us and keep our eyes, ears, all of our senses open to make sure that we don't allow anything to overcome us.
Very good.
Watch for shadows.
Watch for shadows. Yeah, but remember that shadows are not necessarily something to run and hide from. That's that fear, fight or flight thing. So we need to pay attention to the shadows and often turn around and look at them and face them, because they often are simply shadows or phantoms. And when we look at them face on, they're not as bad as what we think. It's kind of like that card, the big friend, you know, the one that has the big dinosaur dragon mouth and looks fierce and looks just very scary. But inside the mouth is this young maiden who is lying very peacefully and very safe. And this is her big friend. This is her protector. So often those fears that we have, those shadows that we see flying over us or coming towards us in dreams, we fear them. But if we learn to turn around and look at them, we'll find not that they're not to be feared, that they actually are helpful and friends to us. Okay, so have we got Peter online? I want everybody to know that Cindy's going to have to do all of this today. All I get to do is talk.
Anybody that happens to be on Purpose Talk Conversations, you folks just kind of chat along there. I'll be over there in a minute and put some stuff up. Putting Peter on the line for you.
Hey, Peter, Hi. This is Jan. How are you today?
I'm doing well. How are you doing?
Well, I'm doing fine. I'm sitting in my car. There's a lovely little breeze blowing. There's music playing outside. I can watch people in the restaurant eating.
Well,
and I can talk with you.
It sounds exciting. Just to remind you, the name of my book is Deep Happy.
Deep Happy.
We were going to be talking about that and that whole process of finding that place inside us that's already happy, and then how to communicate to the universe from there.
Good. So let's talk about that. Tell us a little bit about you and how you came to discover or to unearth Deep Happy and where it took you from there. Let's go back a little bit.
And can you adjust your mic just a little bit there, Peter, so it's a little more in front of you. It's a little bit muffled at the moment.
Okay. How's this? Is that better?
Ooh, yes. A little bit better.
Okay. I'm 63, and I have been into this stuff, pretty much since I was about eight. And when I was eight years old, and when I was eight, somebody told me about infinity. And I just could not imagine something that didn't begin or that didn't end, which was how that was described to me. And for some reason it stuck in my head, and I thought about it a lot. And I finally decided that I would go to where Infinity was. And if I had told someone, they probably would have put me on meds. I don't know. But so I spent several months, and whenever I thought about it, I would close my eyes, and I would try to go to that place that didn't begin or end. I didn't know what that was, but I knew that this was important to do somehow. And when one day I got there, one day I just dropped into the place that was timeless and infinite. And that was a real turning point in my life. I didn't realize it then, but whenever I heard of something that sounded infinite, or I heard that word, or later on I realized it when there was an infinity symbol or something, or then I learned about non-duality, which is kind of the same, I realized that there was something there for me. And many years later, when I was doing long retreats in the Himalayas at 35, I realized that that had been a bridge that had brought a certain level of awareness over from another time, another place, into this life.
And I have a question first. How did you know that you had tapped into that place of no beginning and no end?
Well, because it didn't involve time or space. You know, I've done probably 80 radio interviews, and the first person ever asked me that. Actually, you're the first person ever to ask me that. And I've told that story many times. It just was a different place. It didn't have to do with this world. It wasn't a sleep. It wasn't a dream. It was just a place that was totally, time had no bearing. Space had no bearing. It was another kind of place. And I instinctively knew it. I guess that's my answer, is I instinctively knew it.
Okay.
And I didn't have, wasn't having a sugar rush or anything. And I actually never thought about that before. I just knew it. I go, oh, this is it. This is
okay.
That
place. All right. Well, you know, I read a book one time, and one of the things they were talking about was going into the void. And into the nothingness, or into the void. And I thought, okay, I have to figure this out. And so I allowed myself to go into the void, which was a nothingness space. But I thought, well, I don't understand the purpose of it. And then I realized that it was the void from which everything comes.
Right. It shouldn't really be called the void, although it's a common translation. It should be called the primordial sea. As you talked about, that everything arises from it's undifferentiated consciousness.
Yeah.
Pure consciousness.
Right. Okay. All right. So then go ahead and tell us, keep going with your story. I interrupted you.
Well, it's okay. We have a couple hours to kill. I might as well be happy and have fun here. make it sort of interesting. After that, I found that I wanted, whenever somebody was hurting, I wanted to put my hands on them. And I had this idea of just sending good energy. I didn't even think about good energy. I just thought if I wished them well and put that wish through my hands, that it would help them. And it often did. Sometimes people had a headache or upset. I could just put my hands on them and it would change. And I didn't realize that that was healing, or that was something that was coming from me at that time. And then, things sort of went dormant. And then when I was about 15, I was actually in military school, of all places. And I started to feel this deep spiritual quest, although I did not have the words for it then. I intrinsically knew that there was meaning somewhere, and that my job was to find meaning. And so I signed up for a philosophy class, which I took for a week. And I thought, this is kind of boring. You know, it's just ideas. There's no feeling. There's no energy. There's nothing tangible here. You know, listening to Descartes, who was obviously very erudite and created an important place in the history of thinking, you know, it was too obvious to me. Yeah, the wax, not the wax, and all that. So anyway, then I looked in psychology. I looked in a lot of things, and I didn't quite find it. And then as the late 60s happened, and drugs, sex, and rock and roll showed up, and I was in my last couple of years of high school. I did a lot of research in those three areas, hoping, hoping that it would be in one of those. I gave extra time just to make sure. But it wasn't quite in drug, sex, or rock and roll. And then when I moved to New York and I learned to meditate, I began meditating when I was about 18. And I found it there. I began to find something there that had meaning. And I had read spiritual books, and I had this intuition. I remember as a senior in high school in Michigan, on a cold winter's night at 2 in the morning, I had a copy of Tony Scott's Music for Zen Meditation, which I think was the first spiritual disc out. And I had a copy of Evans Wendt's Tibetan Book of the Dead, which I never read, but I held it dearly. And sitting up and going, where's my tribe? Because I don't know anything that feels like this, but this is what I want. There's something in this book, and there's something in this music, and there's something beyond the cold suburbs of Michigan that was calling me. And so I went to New York, and I began to study meditation. I also studied a lot of other things relating to the last three topics that I looked at. And over the next few years, I would sort of alternate between living in various spiritual communities and exploring different states of consciousness using different things. Gradually, I learned to do some healing, some body work, and some energy work in my very early 20s, and I started to study acupuncture. And so it kind of went on like that until I was about 35. I became an acupuncturist. I was the acupuncturist at the Esalen Institute in Big Sur. I toured with rock bands. I treated a lot of celebrities in L.A. But always trying to figure out what consciousness was and what how to help people become more of themselves, and really looking at the physiology of what transformation was. When I was 35, I had one of those moments again where I needed to go on a quest. Actually, it happened when I was 34. And so I had a practice in the town of Sonoma. I had a beautiful little office and a beautiful girlfriend and a beautiful dog and, a great place to live. But something huge was missing. And I knew I needed to take a spiritual quest. So some helpers showed up, and I ended up studying. I thought I would go to China for the summer. I thought I'd go to China to study more Chinese medicine. I didn't know what else to do. My father was born in China. My grandparents were missionaries there. And so I had, been an acupuncturist. I taught acupuncture. I taught Chinese philosophy. And it seemed like I should go to China. So that summer, I sold everything. I gave everything up, and I went down to study Chinese language in Monterey with the intention of going to China in the fall. I had set up a teaching situation there where I could teach English in exchange for studying at the Shanghai Academy of Traditional Medicine, which is kind of the Harvard of Chinese medicine. But when I was studying Chinese, I started to feel this deep longing for something spiritual, and I kind of knew innately that I wasn't going to find it in China, but my inner voice said, just keep going. So one night, when I rented this house in Monterey, I had put everything in storage or sold everything, and I opened up the closet, and there was a stack of books on Tibetan Buddhism. So it was very monastic that summer. I'd spend probably 8 to 12 hours a day studying Chinese, and then for a break, I would just kind of read these books on Tibetan Buddhism, and I was familiar with it. But it was a very rarefied connection, and one day I was out at night staring at the stars, feeling this ache, and I just said this prayer, please, please, take me to wherever I need to go to get to the next level. And these symbols of light just poured out of my chest and went out into space. And the next day I came home from school and I was meditating in the yard, and I could just barely see the ocean through cracks in a couple houses. And all of a sudden this face appeared to me. It looked at me and turned sideways and disappeared. Well, I was kind of stunned. Didn't know who it was.
Yeah.
But I said to myself, okay, I'm not going to worry about this. If it turns out to be somebody, great. Otherwise, I'm not going to be neurotic about this. So either that day or the next day, I got a letter in the mail saying all my plans to go to China were up in the air. I didn't have the job anymore, and so that wasn't where I was going to go. So I thought about it, and I ended up going to Taiwan as soon as my language class was over, because in Taiwan, at least you can work. My very first day in Taipei, I went to the Palace Museum, and as I got out of the taxi, two Tibetan lamas just walked down the steps and said, and I don't even remember who they were, but it put this bug in me, I got to find some lamas. So about And you know, there's a fairly big Tibetan Buddhist community in Taiwan. You know, they think of the Tibetans kind of like we think of them. And of course, there's more Buddhists in Taiwan. So about 6 weeks later, I was in southern Taiwan, and I got this call. Do you want to meet some lamas? Yeah. Where do you live? So I told him, he says, be out in front in 5 minutes. So 5 minutes later, I went out in front of the house I was staying in, and this taxi drove up, and this old Chinese lama was in the back wearing these old silk robes. He said, get in. So we drove one block. We drove one block away. And we parked, we went in, and on the ground floor of some of the older Taiwanese houses, it's kind of like a garage, and the house starts up above. And as I walked in, there was a picture on the desk of the Tibetan Lama. Only this time I had headdress and glasses. And I said to myself, wow, that looks exactly like the face I saw. And then my mom went, no, they all look alike. You can't do that. So I went upstairs, and they ushered me into a bedroom. And there were these two lamas that had come from Nepal, and on the desk was a picture of the exact face that I'd seen. And, yeah. And in the meantime, I'd set up studying at this brand-new Chinese medical college in Kaohsiung, and I'd been on Chinese TV even, and I was their first American student. And so the lama said, well, we're going to Nepal. I told them the story, and you know, I said, I know this person. And they said, well, we're going to Nepal in 10 days. Would you like to come with us? So, of course, I immediately said yes. And so 10 days later, I was whisked off to Nepal, and that turned out to be a very high lama who'd never accepted a Westerner before. And it was the beginning of a 7-year adventure of being in Nepal and studying with very high lamas and actually being a physician to most of the high lamas in the Nyingma Kagyu tradition. And so it parallel tracks. Up until that point, I had studied and taught Qigong and other forms of healing and meditation and all that. So during that period, I made trips to China to study and trips to Tibet and did long retreats, probably never less than 4 or 5 hours a day of practice. And sometimes I would go up to a cabin that a monastery owned that I could sometimes spend 12 to 16 hours a day for several months at a time alone doing very intense practices. And so that sort of opened up things. And so, you know, when I came back to the States, really my healing practice was about primarily helping people get unstuck and helping people uncover this innate spiritual presence that's inside them. And that's really been my work ever since. As a kid, I was quite depressed and anxious and didn't know myself, didn't like myself. And so I had great compassion for people in that situation. So one of my specialties is kind of integrated psychiatry, anxiety, depression, just disconnection, that sort of thing. And then everybody else I treat within this context of uncovering their spiritual essence. And that's what kind of Deep Happy is about.
Huh. Okay. So can you give us some idea of a few steps? I mean, I'm assuming there's some sort of a process that people can go.
There is. You know, the whole idea, I didn't even realize that there was a happy book movement when I wrote Happy. I had met Jan Johnson at a Booksellers of America conference. I was thinking about writing another book, and she kind of kept after me for a few years. And I'm telling the story because it leads into the book. And so she came over one day a couple of years ago and pretended she wanted acupuncture, but she really wanted to know if I'd written anything. And I said, yes, I've got this idea for Deep Happy. So I wrote an outline and wrote a chapter, and a few weeks later I got a check in the mail. So I said, okay. So every day for about 6 weeks I'd come down in the morning and I'd try to write, and nothing would come out. And I was making it too serious and too important, and I went for it. We were living on top of a mountain in Marin County, and just north of San Francisco. And I went to this holy place, and a little later in our talk, I'll talk about talking to the essence of nature. And I just bowed and prayed to this mountain, Mount Tamalpais, which was a sacred mountain around here. And I said, what do I need to know to write this book? And immediately there was this big, booming whisper that came in my ear that said, it's not the Bible. And I just burst out laughing right there in the trail because I realized I'd made it so serious and so so ponderous and important. And the next day, I sat down to write, and the rest of the book came out every day for about 8 weeks. So Deep Happy is about finding that place inside you that's already okay. You know, things can make us happy, but what they're really doing is reminding us how we already feel inside. Even the worst of us, even the most unhappy of us, even the most savage and tormented of us, somewhere inside there's a happy place. And it's because it's a place where we're connected to the universe. You know, we eat food, we breathe air, we drink water, and so forth to sustain our physical body. But what really keeps us alive is this seed of connection we have to the infinite, to the universe. And so Deep Happy is about recognizing that and beginning to uncover that, making it okay to uncover that, and realizing that most of the things that we do in our life to try to bring happiness are really about kindling that spark of happiness. Now, one of the things I often suggest to people is, I don't know how old you are or how old most of your audience is, but you can say I'm 63, but I remember even by the age of 20, I would look in the mirror and I would realize that there was a part of me that seemed just like I was when I was 4 or 6 or 8 or 10. Or there's a part of us that doesn't change. There's an innate part of us that's still kind of a kid and still has these propensities, and no matter how our body changes and our voice changes and our face changes and our hormones change, there's still a part of us that's just the same inside. And that's kind of really the beginning of Deep Happy. And so in the book Deep Happy, which is really, there's lots of stories in there. It's not the dry book. There's all kinds of fascinating stories that will pull you in. This is slightly an advertisement. But it's true.
Good, I'm going to have to read this.
Good. And along with all the stories, there are these practices about how to begin to feel your body, because it's the conditioning and it's the process of all the things that our body learns to do and not to do that keep us from this place of deep happy. You know, in my work with people, and I work with people at our clinic in Mill Valley, California, and I also do about half my work is with people on the phone. So I work with people all over the country, and I'm starting to work with people around the world. And because when we grow up in a family, we learn patterns in the family. If the families, you know, don't feel love, or they don't feel anger, or they don't feel fear, then we learn not to feel those things. If they learn to feel angry when we're hurt, and hurt when we're angry, then we reverse that. If we learn to be really hard on the outside and not feeling, we do that. If we learn to be really soft but not very direct, we learn that. And then depending upon how our bonding is with each parent, it sets up all kinds of patterns inside us. And so, I mean, this is normal. This is called karma. You know, when you really look at the physiology of how all this works, I've looked at the physiology of how karma imprints and about how to undo these patterns. So Deep Happy is about simply beginning to experience the body, beginning to experience the place inside the body as an awareness, and beginning to notice when the body is shutting ourselves off from that inner place, and notice what the sensations are, and using very simple breathing and awareness practices, we begin to notice when our body is turning us off from this great infinite place of deep happiness and deep connection that's inside us. And
so
as we get...
So if I am not feeling particularly happy, let's just say, and then I need to look inside my body and find out where that's located?
What you'll find is, you know, well, one of the great miseducation of the world is that emotions are in the head. Emotions aren't. They're actually in the physical body. In Chinese medicine,
right.
and also all the Oriental medical systems, and even the Persian systems and so forth. There's very clear relationships between the various organs and the emotions. I mean, the brain mirrors it. And we can have brain traumas, and we can have learning difficulties, conceptual blockages that affect the brain. And we work with those in our clinic. But the real emotional sense is in the body. So when we're, it's usually because we're not letting ourselves feel love, or we're not letting ourselves feel angry, or we're not letting ourselves feel hurt, or we're not letting ourselves feel fear. As soon as we actually let ourselves feel these things, they begin to move and change and heal. And since many of us have not felt these things or have misconstrued these things for a long time, what happens is that it takes a little practice to begin to notice it. So when I'm not feeling good, the first thing I want to ask is, well, where in my body am I not feeling good? Does my stomach ache, or do I feel numb in my upper abdomen, or is my neck tight? Where in my body do I not feel good? And then by simply breathing into that and feeling that, it puts us now in closer to the sense of reality and being. And there's a very simple progressive group of practices in the book that really talk about that. There must be 30 or 40 different practices in the book that you don't have to do, but they're very simple. You can do them while you're driving or walking. And they're just noticing parts of our body.
And so when I'm feeling happy, when I'm find that deep, happy spot, is it always the same place in the body that I'm going to notice it, or is that going to change around as well?
Well, I'm trying to describe this here. Imagine a Twinkie. I'm sure not too many of your listeners have had a Twinkie in a very long time, or a jelly donut. That's probably not a very common thing either. But, you know, we can feel crustiness of the sugar. Let's take a jelly donut. You know, we can feel that there's some parts of the outside that have more of the frosting and less frosting. Some parts can be dry. Some parts can be really soft. Some parts can be really thin. Some parts can be really thick. But inside, there's that jelly. And that jelly is really our deep, happy place. So it's kind of in our core. And once you get sort of used to it, and we've all felt it, you know, it's that deep sense of peace and awareness and thankfulness and hope. We've all, even the worst of us have had moments like that. And so once you begin to feel that, then you can let the physical body be immersed in that sense. So the deep happiness, which you probably could also call Buddha nature, Christ consciousness, you know, there's other words for it. I think deep happiness.
Mm-hmm.
Of easier, there's not so much expectation about it.
Right.
The other stuff is just covering it over, and the deep happiness is there. And you just get used to it. And I remember the day that I sent my finished manuscript into my publisher, my editor. I got a letter in the mail from the IRS saying that I owed $78,000.
Oh my gosh!
For 2 years that I didn't really make much money. I had a lot of deductions. So what I experienced in that moment, I thought to myself, oh, this is my final exam. What I experienced on the outside was fear, anger, frustration, a little confusion. But inside, I felt okay. And so that's really what it's like. You know, there's a part of you that's really okay. There's a part of you that knows that things will work out. There's a part of you that knows that things will survive, and there's a part of you that's connected to a much greater source of intelligence, wisdom, intuition. And yet our body is programmed to sometimes be in worry, fear, confusion, anger. But because you're able to hold on to that inner core, you're able to sense that part of you that's still all right. Then it gives you a place to stand and be while you figure the rest out.
Okay, good. So when I get something in the mail or something happens and I get frustrated with it, even though underneath I feel it's okay, it's still okay to get frustrated with it, right?
Oh yeah. We're not Terminators. You know, I'm not at this place yet, but I think eventually, you know, nothing phases you because you realize it does absolutely no good to be phased. It doesn't.
Uh-huh.
Anger has anger and fear have a certain primal thing, you know. Fear tells you, okay, don't step over the edge, or don't eat that, or be careful, or think, or pay attention. And anger sometimes can marshal strength in a certain place where we need it. You know, we need to be strong. We need to cut through the mire. But it's not a disconnected or a rage. What it is, it's just a clarity marshaling itself.
Oh yeah.
And so all the emotions have a very healthy thing. It's. You know, sadness is a beautiful thing. It's sort of the intrinsic quality of humanity. Sensing the suffering of the world, sensing the processes of life, sensing the time, you know, the timeliness of life and death. you know, there's a sadness to that, but it's a beautiful sadness. It makes us appreciate the delicacy of life. It's like seeing a dewdrop on the rose in the morning. The rose is already beautiful, but there's something about that dewdrop there that just makes it even more precious.
Oh, yes. Yes.
And so all of our emotions are great. We just don't want to get stuck there. We don't want to think that we are the emotions. It's just a language with which the body connects to our flowing reality and helps us to feel the nature of events that are flowing past us and that we're part of. But we don't want to get stuck in anger. We don't want to get stuck in these things. We don't want to see the world through angry eyes. We don't want to see the world as a victim, because we don't have to. Nobody's a victim.
Okay, I'm going to ask you a question in just a minute, but I want to invite our callers, our listeners, to call in if they want. The question, I'll give you a minute to think it over while I do that, is if there is, when I find myself or any of us find ourselves in a place of feeling like a victim, feeling overwhelmed, feeling angry, or feeling depressed, going into that downward spiral, what is the one thing that we can do to stop the process, the downward process, and start pulling ourselves out of that? And while you're figuring that out, which I know you already have it figured out, but I'll give you that moment, I want to let our listeners know that you can call in. Cindy, if you're there, I need you to finish the number. I know that it's 347-205. What's the rest of it? I think it's 9374. I'll say that that's what it is until Cindy can come back in and tell us what the phone number is.
I can tell you what it is because I've got it on my schedule.
Oh, good.
Yes, it's 347-205-9074.
9074, awesome. So if you want to call in and talk to Peter or talk to me or both of us, feel free to do that. And Peter just gave you the number to call. So now, Peter, if somebody gets stuck, or is starting, not get stuck, but is starting to that downward spiral where they know that they're going to get stuck because that's their habit, what's the one thing that they can do to stop the process and start climbing back out again?
Well, the very first thing is just to take a deep breath and be in your body, be in the present time, and really see exactly where you are. Most of the time when we freak out, we're freaking out unnecessarily. We're freaking out from habit. We're forgetting the big picture.
Right.
So the very first thing is to ground yourself by breathing in your tummy. When we breathe into the lower abdomen, it switches us from a stressed mode to a relaxed mode. We don't get our wisdom necessarily in our stressed mode. We don't heal. We don't marshal our reserves in a stressed mode. So just by taking a few breaths in the tummy and then feel yourself coming back into reality in the present time. Because most of the time when we're freaked out or depressed, we're not really in the present time. We're in the past or the future or some other place that has not as much to do with what's really going on as we might think. I say
okay,
in my book, if we're not happy, it's because our perspective is too small. So really begin
right.
to just be present. Take a few deep breaths. Relax a little bit. And look around and think a little bit. And most of the time, that's a start right there to realizing that we do have resources, we do have possibilities. It may not be as perilous as we think. And so that's the first step. I actually have lots of those practices in the book. The second step is just to think clearly, you know, what's going on. If we're depressed, I mean, because you mentioned a few words, and they're actually a little different. If we're depressed, and usually when we're depressed, it means we don't like ourselves, we're not thinking good things, we're in a very negative place, we're kind of numb, we can't get started, we can't clean, we can't do, we can't function. That's a good time to remember that the word depressed should really be replaced by suppressed. Because depression is really 99% of the time suppression. So what am I saying? What am I angry about? What am I fearful about? What am I hurt about? What am I not seeing? What am I not doing? What am I not feeling? So that's the first thing. And that puts you right back in your reality. And if you're freaked out about something happening, if you're in physical danger, well, then stop, take a deep breath, look around, see what you have to do, move away from the danger, ask for help, think about who you are and what the real situation is, how clear are you, and so forth. And, you know, those are the Those are the beginning steps. It's not magic. But the main thing is to be in your body, because the answers are in your body. The universe speaks to us from our body. Once we get a little clearer on the process, then we can even be out of our body and get direct information. But relaxing the body is a really good start, an important start. And it's okay to ask for help. You know, we forget. I was depressed until I was about 30, and I had no idea. I had no idea I was depressed. I wasn't very happy, and I didn't
see
so positively. And, you know, as human beings, we deserve to be happy. Our days deserve to be easy most of the time. You know, no matter how many mistakes we've made or what a bad person we might think we are, inside we're a good person. The same life and consciousness made us has made the greatest of beings. There's very little difference.
You know, there are. We went through a series on this program a while ago called Healing from Abuse. And I noticed that there were a lot of people who were listening at that time in particular who had suffered traumatic situations in their lives, with spousal abuse, with abuse as children, with abuse in the work world, etc. And it seems like some of them got into this pattern of almost like a PTSD type of a thing, where they would get panic stricken and couldn't seem to stop it. I guess, and that's where my mind keeps going, is to help people get out of that particular downward spiral. I mean, I know that taking a deep breath, and we say take a deep breath, and I want to remind people, when you're taking a deep breath, you're breathing down into your belly, not just in your lungs, but breathe down into your belly. And remember that that's where all the air needs to go in and go out, and you breathe into your chest last. And that will, as Peter says, help you go into a more relaxed state and not from the tension. But Peter, when these people are dealing with PTSD, with something very serious where they've had been abused, the breathing is a good first step, but it's more than, I don't want to say just depression, but it's more than depression. It's a real terror thing that's going.
Yeah. And you know, it's not very well known, but men are actually abused as much as women, if not more. When you look, and this is a startling statistic, some women know this, a lot of women don't. The statistics of men being abused are huge.
Right.
And I'm not saying men don't do terrible things to women, and nobody should abuse anybody. And so, you know, I'm not supporting any kind of abuse at all. But men are terribly abused by some women. It doesn't, you know.
Yes, they are.
So
you're right.
It's a person problem. And so many times, well, anyway, that's a whole show. I don't want to take off there. But the first thing to do is go to a safe place. If you feel you're abused emotionally, energetically, or physically, go somewhere else. Go to a friend. Go to a relative. Go to a shelter. Go to the police.
Right.
But put yourself, be very, very pragmatic. You have to have a safe body. Then you have to have a safe head.
And once you've done that, though, and once you have gotten out of the situation, but nevertheless the terror still comes up in you.
Oh.
You know, something will happen and all of a sudden it's like a flashback type situation. How do you deal with something like that to find your happy spot?
Well, the first thing is to notice. The first thing is to notice that the fear, the expectation, is just a habit. It's a habit in the body. So as soon as you feel that, like say all of a sudden I feel fearful and nervous. Well, there may or may not be anything to be fearful and nervous about at that moment, but that fearfulness and that nervousness has a location in the stomach, probably in the abdomen. Some people feel in the lower abdomen, some people feel in the upper abdomen. So breathe into the stomach and feel where you feel the fear. And then by just expanding and relaxing the breath in that area, you'll find that gripping sensation of fear changes.
Okay.
Now, it may take a week or a month before it doesn't really affect you so often. But every single time you notice the place of the sensation, which is the fear or the anger or whatever, the sadness, and you breathe into it and feel the body literally expanding and relaxing in that area with the breath, you take a step toward freedom. Now, you know, we may have been doing that for decades.
Right.
So it may take a few weeks. To to not do it so habitually. But as soon as you take a single breath into the place where you feel that emotion or that sensation and feel it expand and relax, you feel it change. In one breath, breathe into the place where you feel that anxiety or fear, whatever it is, you feel that change in that moment. And as it expands, you will feel a change. That begins to empower you because you realize you are not stuck. You have these habits which have stuck us. But just the simple act of being conscious and begin to shift the physical sensations through basically just the expansion and relaxation of the breath, which is just kind of like massaging a stiff muscle, that is a strong underline to the idea that you're not powerless, that you can take back your life. You can take back these reactive sensations. You don't have to get stuck in these post-traumatic feelings. And most times, if somebody is abused, they've been abused earlier. Most people that take an abusive relationship or find themselves in one, in some way or another, have experience with that, even though it might have looked very different as a kid. And so often we're blaming our mate or our spouse or our friend or our boss, but these patterns go deeper, because then the question is, well, why did you pick them? Why would you pick somebody that's physically or emotionally or energetically abusive? And we pick them to heal. You know, we don't pick them for abuse. We pick them as an unconscious attempt to heal, to see the patterns and then recognize what they are so we don't have to do that anymore.
Yeah.
So we can't be mad at ourselves for putting ourselves in there. We all do our best, even if it doesn't look very good. And then we begin to consciously walk our way out of the sensations. We put ourselves in a safe place. We begin to think very clearly. And then things get better.
So now you said that you have a clinic.
Yeah.
Would you tell us a little bit about the clinic? Where is it and what kind of work are you doing?
Yeah. We have a clinic. My wife and I have the Center for Health and Happiness. It's in Mill Valley, California.
Okay.
If anybody wants to contact me, they can. I'll give you the phone number.
Okay.
And like I say, we do work. People come in sometimes for a week or two here. They can stay here and we can work on them, or if they're in the area, we can see them, you know, on a regular basis. And it's in Mill Valley, California, and it's called the Center for Health and Happiness. And I'm Peter Fairfield, and the phone number is 415-377-0862, 415-377-0862. And
do you have an email or a website?
We have several. The email is Mystical Body, Mystical, M-Y-S-T-I-C-A-L, Body. Body.
Mystical Body? I'm sorry,
and
I interrupted you.
And Yahoo.com.
So MysticalBody at Yahoo.com?
Yeah.
Okay.
If you Google the Center for Health and Happiness, you'll come up with our clinic.
Okay.
And if you Google Peter Fairfield, you'll come up with several websites. You'll come up with our clinic website. We have a website for the book called DeepHappyLife.com. The book Deep Happy is available on Amazon and Kindle. And I'm just about to record an audio version of it.
Oh, good.
And
okay.
By the end of summer, we'll have a whole bevy of guided practices that will be available for download.
Awesome.
And the phone sessions are fascinating. I've developed this whole system. I spent 40 years really teaching meditation and Qigong and working with people in groups. And so on the phone, we guide people into experiencing the sensations in their body. I'm a medical intuitive, and so I can kind of see what's going on in someone's body as I talk to them. I can guide them in on the phone using various sensory processes and begin to open them up, just like if we were doing acupuncture in person. And if anybody's interested in that, they can call me and we can talk about that. Again, my number is 415-377-0862. And so at the clinic, we have a whole range of Chinese herbal formulas, which are very detailed expressions of shifting physiology in the emotional level and the consciousness level. We also have many, many different homeopathic formulations, mostly from Europe. We use nutritional substances. My wife is also an acupuncturist. She does neural stimulation, so if there's been any kind of brain trauma or conceptual misalignments or anything, we can help people with that. And it's all done with this idea that people are, everybody has a holy part of themselves, and that holy part of themselves is connected to the universe. And we'll talk about it in a minute, I think, next, what it means to be connected to the universe and how to actually talk to the universe and get instructions from the universe.
Well, let's talk about that.
Let's do that.
Yeah. So how do you do that?
The first thing is you ask, hey, you, what do I do now? It's like when I was standing on the mountain going, just tell me what to do. And the voice came back and said, it's not the Bible. And so I have lots and lots of stories about this. Well, let me give you an example of how it can work. Now, we're so used to hearing all these thoughts in our head. It takes a little practice to begin to decipher what's our head and what's information. And so we do that kind of by trying. One time a number of years ago, I was having a very stressful time. And I think I had separated from my wife, and it was just very difficult. And I knew I needed a break. And so this voice said, you need to go up to Northern California to the town of Mendocino, get a room, and kind of hang out by the ocean for a couple of days. Well, it was Memorial Day or Labor Day or something, and my intellectual mind said, you know, but there's no room. They've all been booked for months. This voice said, no, just follow these instructions and you'll get there.
So, okay. Don't you love it when that happens?
Yeah. The thing is, it happens all the time. We just don't trust
it
or miss it.
Yes.
And, you know, if I didn't find anything, I could always drive back. It's only 2.5 hours away. So you don't want to put yourself in a dangerous situation, although actually it works best then. But it's good to try it a little bit the other way. So anyway, I drove north. I left late morning on Friday. And just as I was coming into the town of Little River, which is just south of Mendocino, there was a big lodge, Little River Inn. And, of course, there was a giant sign that said, no vacancy. But the voice said, pull in here.
Uh-huh.
So I looked at myself and I go, okay. So I walked in and I kind of sheepishly said, I don't suppose you have any rooms. He looked at me, looked at the sign, looked back at me and goes, no, it is a weekend and we're usually pretty booked anyway. So I said, okay, well, let me know if you get any cancellations. He said, yeah, sure, I'll do that. So I went back in the car feeling kind of dumb, and the voice said, good, drive north, drive slowly. So I drove north slowly, went through the town of Mendocino, just got to the far side of town, and the voice said, turn around, drive back slowly. Turned around, drive back slowly, said, pull in and go into the office again. So I pulled in, I went to the office again, and I walked in, the guy looked at me, looked at the sign, was just about to say something, and the phone rang. And it was a cancellation. And I got a beautiful room with a great view. And the guy looked at me and looked at the sign and looked at the phone and said, here's your room. So, you know, that's a fairly detailed one. But they can work like that. When I work with people, I'm always getting information about what to do and what order to do things. I have a whole format I developed so that the person's body and being is speaking to me, so I know, you know, I know how quickly to move things or how deeply to go and all that.
Yeah.
I mean, I have tried to live my life that way. You know, when I saw the picture of my teacher and I found him, that was like that. One time I went to hear some African music at a jazz place in San Francisco, and it was a big theater. It was the yearly San Francisco Jazz Society's thing. The first band was great. The second band was boring. So I went out to the lobby, and I started talking to this woman who turned out to be the manager of the first band. So this was an African band. And we got to talking, and when she heard I was an acupuncturist, she said, oh, well, the band has been having little bouts of malaria. Is there anything you can do? I said, well, yeah, I used to treat that a lot when I lived in Asia. So I ended up going to their hotel the next morning, Sunday, and we just had a great time. You know, I got them feeling better, and we just, through my broken French and their broken English and the manager who was Western translating, we had a great time. And so they invited me to go on tour with them. They were going to go to the Festival of the Desert in Mali. They were from Mali. And so this was October. So the following January, I and a friend flew to Mali. Had a great trip. And on the way back, we decided that we would visit Morocco. Neither of us had seen Morocco. And so I said, let's do an experiment. 8 years before, I had met a Moroccan Sufi teacher who was visiting California. His name was Kostas. And I had a deep and profound connection with him. He had wanted to train me as a Sufi teacher, and I started to do the practices, and I got very clear guidance that this wasn't where I was to go right now. But I loved him. I just cared for him. We had a deep connection. But I didn't know where he was. I just knew he was in Morocco. So I said to my friend, let's do an experiment. Let's let the universe show us where he lives. So I said, we're going to get off at the airport. I think it's in Marrakesh. We're going to walk around. We're going to go to the train station. We're going to walk around until somebody says, have you ever been to? And wherever they ask us if we've been to, we're going to buy a ticket to there. And we'll just see what happens. So we walked around. After about 15 minutes, this young boy comes up and says, oh, are you from America? Yes. Have you ever been to Fez? It's so beautiful this time of year. We went, no, but we're just about to buy a ticket. Funniest thing. So we went. We bought a ticket to Fez. And 45 minutes later, we boarded the train. Now, the train, I guess there was, you know, 8-10 cars, and every car had probably 8 or 10 compartments in it, and every compartment had, you know, 2 bench seats for 3 people each. So we got into our car, and when we sat down, there was a very distinguished-looking Moroccan gentleman across the way reading a book, Buddha in the Suburbs. So I thought to myself, well, I've got to talk to this person. Not really thinking what would happen, you know. And so I started talking to him, and after a while, I said, oh, by the way, do you know Sidi Amin Kostas? He goes, Sidi, yes, he's a friend of mine. I haven't seen him in a few years, but he lives in Fez. So I looked at my friend. I go, wow, this is good. We felt very lucky. Anyway, again, there's different cars, and each car there's different compartments and so forth.
Right.
And so the very next stop, this young woman got on the train, sat next to me, a young Moroccan woman, and she started, after a few minutes, started talking to the gentleman across the way. He was older. After about 15 minutes, he looks at him and goes, she knows Kostas. He was her advisor at the university. So that night, we had his name, address, phone number, email, and the next night he came to dinner where we were staying. And he wasn't at all surprised at how we found him, because that's how he was. So when we actually put, and it's not that I'm so psychic or so special. It's just that I have dared to dare the universe.
Right.
We are the universe. You know, it's like a cell in our pancreas talking to the brain. You know, I need more sugar. It's not like the brain doesn't care or it's not connected. We are infinitely connected out of time and space to the infinity of the pure universe, which is just consciousness. So when we put it out there, when we want to speak to the universe, we want the universe to speak to us, it will, and it will quickly. We just have to sort of be open to what it says, and we have to begin to experiment with that process so that we can trust it more and more. You know, the whole idea, people have, you know, that they have their animals. You know, like the crow and the rabbit are two of my power animals. And I know that whenever I'm thinking about something, if I'm driving, if I see, or walking or hiking, and I see a crow or a rabbit in a certain way, I know I need to think about what I, you know, to pay attention to what I was thinking about. Now, I don't know if part of me knew there was going to be a rabbit or a crow, so an inner part of me put up a thought process for me to pay attention to, so I would respond to it because I had seen a rabbit or a crow, or the other way around. But it doesn't matter, because the entirety of the universe knows our every word, knows our heart, knows our pain, knows our needs. And so once we begin to experience this part of deep happy, we get used to this process in the midst of all the crap, there's still this place where we're really okay, where it doesn't hurt anymore,
yeah.
where we're fine, and where we're connected. Once we begin to experiment with that, we find that there's this incredible information and guidance and knowingness that we all have. Every single being has it. Although this particular political party has a lot of trouble with it, but I'm not going to go there too much.
Yeah. Okay, Peter, I want to ask you if there's anything that we've forgotten. Is there anything particular that you want to touch on that we haven't done yet? And I want to remind our listeners that they can call in to talk to Peter or myself, and we'll do that number again is 347-205. Okay, Peter, what's the last four? 9?
Yeah, let me get to my calendar here.
9074.
9074, yes.
9074. So 347-205-9074. Thank you, Cindy. So is there anything that we have not covered?
Well, there's a lot of other stuff in the book. One of the first chapter that I wrote in the book was about death. And so many of us have questions and fear about death because we can sort of push it away, but in the end it's creeping up on us. And if we're afraid of death, it's sort of hard to feel deep happy.
Well, that's
true. I mean, in a certain way, we all know our last life. We were upside down in water. We heard voices around us, but we couldn't see them or touch them. We had a sense of guidance and a support, but we couldn't quite put our finger on it. There was something beyond us that we couldn't quite see or know or understand. And one day we died. We were whooshed away from that environment, and we were born here. We were born in this world. And, you know, I've been in altered states most of my life. And sometimes it would surprise me if I would have a moment where I would fear death. And one time a few years ago, I was lying in bed. I had a house in Stinson Beach where I could hear the ocean. And I think it was the spring or something. And so I had the door open. I could hear the waves outside. It was quite wonderful. And I felt this deep, profound terror of dying. And I thought, I caught myself. I thought to myself, wow. Why am I afraid? I have been in altered states. I have talked to beings that have passed. I have gotten guidance from them that was real. I have worked with people that have passed on. I have worked with people that have past memories. Why am I afraid of dying? And then it came to me. It's the body that's afraid of dying.
Right.
When our body is disconnected from this deep, happy place, from our inner essence, from our soul, then the body forgets that it, too, is infinite. So as soon as we begin to notice that, we feel the fear is actually the fear of the body, and we go into our deep, happy place, or our inner place, the place of our soul, all that goes away. Recently, my mother-in-law died. She had been sick for a long time, and she had been in a home, and gradually decreased. You know, for the last month she was barely conscious at all. My son had always had kind of a fear of death, worried about it, thought about it. He's 18. And so we had sat with my mother-in-law in her hospital room, I guess till around 10 that night. And then I went back to the house to feed the dogs, and my son went to a 24-hour exercise place. So my wife called about 11 saying that her mom had just died. Then about 15 minutes later, my son came home, and I said, oh, M died. He goes, yes, at 10:47. It turned out he had been on an exercise bike in this 24-hour exercise place, and all of a sudden he'd felt this whoosh of energy and this big release. And so he'd experienced my mother-in-law dying.
Uh-huh, yeah.
And so he hasn't been afraid of death since.
Oh, good.
And if you talk to people, almost everybody has an experience or knows someone had an experience of somebody that had just passed coming to them, telling them things, communicating. It's really a part of our culture. So anyway, if you know, there's a lot of things that can screw us up or worry us unnecessarily, But life is safe. Death, Ram Dass says death is safe. That's one of my favorite quotes. So if people want to work on things, or they have aches and pains, or they're depressed, or they want to evolve, they can definitely get in touch. Again, I'm Peter Fairfield. My number is 415-377-0862. We have the Center for Health and Happiness in Mill Valley, California. And you can just Google Peter Fairfield and get a lot of stuff. And you can also, you know, talk to Janet anytime here at Purpose Talk Radio. She's got a lot of answers. And there's a lot of possibilities for you to help get help in this world.
Right. And you can get Peter's book, Deep Happy, on Amazon. You can also go to PurposeTalkRadio.com and click on the Guest tab and the one for Peter Fairfield, and you'll find a link to his book on that page as well. Well, Peter, I want to thank you very much for joining us today. It's been very, very interesting, and I appreciate all of your insights. And I know that everybody who's listening, either now and or who's going to be listening to the recording, will also appreciate them.
Well, great, and let's talk after the show.
Okay.
Anyway, talk to you soon. Thank you, everybody, for listening. It was a really pleasure to share my stories with you.
All right. Thank you very much. And I'm going to turn this over to Cindy now. First of all, I want to let you know you can contact me at jan@purposetalkradio.com. Remember to go to truetrinity.com to get the song I Am Who I Am and or the one Be the Difference. They're both wonderful. And the really amazing thing is they only cost a dollar to download them. So there you go. Where can you get less expensive music? So I want to thank you, everybody, for joining us. And I'm going to wish you soul blessings, and Cindy is going to take it from here.
Have a great one.
I am me. I am who I am. I am who I'm going to be. Walking in the spirit moment by moment, fulfilling my own destiny. I am me, I am who I am, I am who I'm gonna be. Walking in the spirit moment by moment, fulfilling my own destiny. Walking in the spirit moment by moment, fulfilling my own destiny. Walking in the spirit moment by moment, fulfilling my own destiny.